Chapter 5. I now pronounce you. The little demon, known as Number One, cut a strange figure waddling down the LEP shuttle's gangplank. A small, stocky individual with grey armoured plates and short limbs. He looked a little like a miniature upright rhinoceros with fingers and toes, except for the head. The head was pure gargoyle.
I wish I had a tail, thought Number One.
In actual fact, he did have a tail, but it was stubby and not good for much, except making snow fans in Haven City's artificial weather park. Number One consoled himself with the observation that at least his tail didn't dangle down the toilet. Some of the Hybris demons had trouble adjusting to the newfangled seats on the recycling lounges in Haven. He had heard horror stories. Apparently, there had been 3 emergency reattachments this month alone. The transition from limbo to normal time had been difficult for all demons. But there were many more positives than negatives. Restrictions imposed under the old tribal leader were now being lifted. Demons could eat cooked food if they felt like it. Family units were taking hold again. Even the most belligerent demons were a lot more relaxed with their mothers around. It was difficult to shake off 10 millennia of human hating, and many of the buck demons were undergoing therapy or were on mood pills to stop them hopping a shuttle to the surface and chomping on the first human limb they saw. Not Number One, though, who had no limb-chomping ambitions whatsoever. He was something of an anomaly among demons. Number One loved everyone, even humans, especially Artemis Fowl, who had saved them all from the deathly dreariness of limbo, not to mention Leon Abbott, the psychopathic ex-tribe leader. So when the call came through to Section 8 that Artemis needed him, Number One had strapped himself into the division's shuttle and demanded to be taken above ground. Wing Commander Vinyaya had agreed, because disagreeing could lead to all sorts of magical tantrums from the fledgling warlock. Once, in a fit of frustration, Number One had accidentally shattered the magnifying wall of the city's huge aquarium. Fairies were still finding minnows in their toilet ponds. "You can go," Vinyaya had told him, "but only if you take a squad of guards to hold your hand every step of the way." Which did not literally mean hold his hand, as Number One had found out when he tried to link with the captain of the guard. "But Commander Vinyaya said," he'd objected.
"Stow the hand, demon," ordered the captain. "There'll be no hand-holding on my watch."
And so Number One appeared to approach Foul Manor alone, though he was flanked by a dozen shielded fairies. Halfway up the avenue, he remembered to shroud his real appearance with a shape-shifting spell. Any human who happened to be looking down the driveway would now see a small boy in flowing flowered robes strolling towards the front door. This was an image Number One had seen in a human movie from the last century, and he thought it was appropriately non-threatening. Miss Book happened to appear at the doorway just as Number One reached it. The sight of him stopped the nurse publicist in her tracks. She tugged off her glasses as though they were feeding false information to her. "Hello there, little boy," she said, smiling, though she probably would not have been so jolly had she been aware of the 12 plasma rifles pointed at her head. "Hi," said Number One cheerily. "I love everyone, so no need to feel threatened." Miss Book's smile faltered. "Threatened? Of course not. Are you looking for someone? Are you playing dress-up?" Artemis appeared at the doorway, interrupting the conversation. "Ah, Ferdinand, where have you been?" he said, quickly shepherding Number One past the nurse. "This is the gardener's boy, Ferdinand," he explained. "A dramatic type. I'll summon his father to collect him."
"Good idea," said Miss Book, doubtfully. "I know your mother's room is sealed, but don't let him upstairs all the same."
"Of course not," said Artemis.
"I'll send him out the back way."
"Good," said the nurse. "I just need a breath of fresh air. Then I will come to check on your mother."
"Take your time," said Artemis. "I can read the instruments."
"I designed a few of them," he thought.
As soon as Miss Book disappeared around the corner, Artemis escorted his demon friend up the stairs.
"We're going upstairs," objected Number One mildly. "Didn't that young lady tell you not to allow me upstairs?"
Artemis sighed.
"How long have you known me, Number One?"
Number One nodded craftily.
"Ah, I see. Artemis Fowl never does what he's told to do."
Holly greeted Number One on the landing, but refused to hug him until he dropped the shape-shifting spell.
I hate the feel of those things, she said. It's like hugging a wet sponge. Number One pouted. But I enjoy being Ferdinand. Humans smile at me.
Artemis assured him that there was no surveillance in his study, and so the demon warlock waited until the door was closed behind them, then banished the spell with a click of his fingers. Ferdinand unravelled and fell from Number One's body in a flurry of sparks, leaving the small grey demon warlock wearing nothing but a wide grin. Holly hugged him tightly.
I knew you would come. We need you desperately.
Number One stopped smiling.
Ah, yes. Artemis's mother. Does she want a magical cure?
That's the last thing she wants, said Holly. Once the situation was explained to Number One, he immediately agreed to help.
You're in luck, Artemis, said the little demon, wiggling his eight fingers. I did a module on time travel last week on the Warlock diploma course I'm taking.
Small class, I bet, commented Artemis dryly.
Just me, admitted Number One. And Quan, of course, my teacher. Apparently I'm the most powerful warlock Quan's ever seen.
Good, said Artemis. Then transporting us all into the past shouldn't pose any problems for you. Foley had projected himself onto five of Artemis's various monitors.
All?
Spluttered each image.
All? You can't take Number One with you.
Artemis was not in the mood for argument.
I need him, Foley. End a discussion.
Foley looked as though his head would bulge through the screens.
It is most certainly not end of discussion. Holly is an adult. She can make her own decision, but Number One is little more than a child. You cannot jeopardize him on one of your missions. A lot of hopes rest on that little demon. The future of the fairy families.
None of us will have a future if Number One doesn't take us to the past.
Please stop,
said Number One.
All this arguing is making me dizzy. There's no time for it.
Artemis's face was red, but he held his tongue, unlike Foley, who kept shouting, but at least he muted the screens.
Foley needs to vent, explained Holly, or he gets headaches.
The three waited until the centaur calmed himself. Then Number One spoke.
In any event, I cannot go with you, Artemis. That's not how it works.
But you transported us from Limbo.
Quan did that. He's a master. I am but an apprentice. And anyway, we had no desire to go back to Limbo. If you wish to return here, I need to stay as a marker.
Explain, said Artemis tersely.
Number One spread his arms wide. I am a beacon, he declared, a shining supernova of power. Any magic I release into the ether will be attracted back to me. I send you into the past, and you will snap back to me like puppies on a leash.
Number One frowned, not happy with his simile.
One of those retractable leashes.
Yes, we get it, said Artemis. How long will it take to weave the spell? Number One chewed his lip for a moment.
About as long as it takes you two to remove your clothing.
said Artemis, half choking with surprise.
Darvet!
Swore Holly.
I think we all know what Darvet means, said Number One, but herk is not English, unless you mean hark, which means to listen or to remember something from the past, which I suppose could be relevant. Or perhaps you were speaking Dutch, and then herk would translate as squat.
Number One paused for a wink,
which means squat to me.
Artemis leaned close to the demon's cornet-shaped ear.
Why do we need to take our clothes off? That is a very good question, said Holly into the other ear. It's quite simple, said Number One. I'm not so skilled as Quan, and even with Quan overseeing the last transfer, you two managed to switch an eye each, which was probably because someone was focusing on stealing magic. If you take clothes or guns in there, they could become a part of you.
The demon raised a stiff finger.
Lesson Number One of time transfers, he stated. Keep it simple. It's going to take all of your concentration just to reassemble your bodies. And you'll be thinking for the lemur, too.
Number One noticed both Artemis and Holly's awkward expressions and took pity on them.
I suppose you could keep one thing, if you must. A small garment, but make sure it's your colour,
because you could be wearing it for a really long time. Though they both knew that this was no time for modesty, neither Artemis nor Holly could suppress a blush. Holly covered her embarrassment by tearing off her shimmer suit as quickly as possible.
I'm keeping the one piece,
she said belligerently, daring Number One to argue.
The one piece looked similar to a swimsuit, but was padded on the shoulders and back to support a wing rig.
There were also heat and kinetic panels, which could absorb energy from the wearer to power the suit.
"Okay," said Number One, "but I would advise you to remove the pads and any other electronics."
Holly nodded, tearing the pads from their Velcro strips. Artemis gathered Holly's things.
"I'll put your helmet and suit in the safe, just to be certain they're secure. No need to take chances with the people's technology."
"Now you're thinking like a centaur," Foley piped up.
It took only a minute to hide the fairy gear, and when he returned from the safe room, Artemis took off his shirt and trousers carefully, hanging them in his wardrobe. He placed his loafers on a shoe rack alongside several similar black pairs, and one brown for casual days.
"Nice underwear," snickered Foley from the screen, momentarily forgetting the gravity of the situation.
Artemis was wearing a pair of red Armani boxer shorts, which were pretty much the same colour as his face.
"Can we get on with it?" he snapped. "Where do you need us to stand?"
"Wherever you need to be," replied Number One simply. "It's far easier for me if you take off and land at the same point."
"It's hard enough, shooting you off down a wormhole faster than the speed of light without worrying about location too."
"We're in the right location," said Artemis. "This is where we need to be."
"You need to know when you want to arrive," added Number One. "The temporal coordinates are as important as the geographical ones."
"I know when."
"Very well," said Number One, rubbing his hands together. "Time to send you on your way."
Holly remembered something.
"I haven't completed the ritual," she said. "I'm low on magic, and without weapons, that could be a problem. We don't have an acorn."
"Not to mention a bend in the river," added Artemis. Number One smirked.
"Those things could be problems, unless..."
A spiral rune on the demon's forehead glowed red and spun like a Catherine wheel. It was hypnotizing.
"Wow," said Holly. "That's really..."
Then a pulsing beam of crimson magic blasted from the center of the rune, enveloping Holly in a cocoon of light.
"Now you're full to the brim," said Number One, bowing low. "Thank you very much. I'm here all week. Don't forget to tip your goblins and bury those acorns."
"Wow," said Holly again, when her fingertips stopped buzzing. "That's a neat trick."
"More than you know. That's my own signature magic. The Number One cocktail, if you like, which makes you a beacon in the time."
Artemis shuffled self-consciously. "How long do we have?"
Number One gazed at the ceiling while he ran some calculations.
300 years. No, 3 days.
Holly can bring you back at any time before that, simply by making herself open to my power. But after 3 days, the link grows weaker."
"Is there anything we can do about that?"
"Let's face facts. All powerful I may be, but I'm a novice at this. So taking off from where you landed is vital. If you go beyond 3 days, then you're stuck in the past."
"If we do get separated, couldn't Holly come back and get me?" wondered Artemis.
No, she could not," said Number One. "It would be impossible for you to meet at a point neither of you had experienced. This is a one-time deal only. It will take everything I have to hold you together for this trip. Any more and your atoms will lose their memory and simply forget where it is they're supposed to go. Both of you have already been in the time stream twice. I can transport objects forever and a day, but living beings break down without a warlock in the stream to shield them."
Holly asked a very pertinent question.
"Number One, have you done this before?"
"Of course," said the demon. "Several times. On a simulator. And two of the holograms survived."
Artemis's determination barely flickered. "Two survived.
The last two?"
"No," admitted Number One. "The last two were trapped in a time wormhole and consumed by quantum zombies."
Holly felt her pointy ears tingle. Always a bad sign. Elfin ears could sense danger.
"Quantum zombies? You're not serious."
"That's what I said to Quan. He wrote the program."
"This is irrelevant," said Artemis sharply. "We have no option but to go."
"Very well,"
said Number One, flexing his fingers. He bent his knees, resting his entire body weight on the tip of his tail.
"Power posture," he explained. "I do some of my best work in this position."
"So does Mulch Diggums," muttered Foley. "Quantum zombies. I need to get a copy of that program."
A red haze blossomed around the demon warlock, tiny lightning bolts crackling across his horns.
"He's powering up,"
said Foley from the screens. You'll be off any second. Remember, try not to touch anything you don't have to. Don't talk to anyone. Don't contact me in the past. I have no desire not to exist. Artemis nodded. I know. Make as little impact as possible. In case the time paradox theory has some merit. Holly was impatient to get going. Enough science. Just blast us into the past. We'll bring the monkey back. Lemur, said Artemis and Foley together. Number One closed his eyes. When he opened them again, they were pure...
Okay, ready to go,
he said conversationally. Artemis blinked. He was expecting Number One's voice of power to be a bit less squeaky. Are you sure? Number One groaned.
I know, it's the voice, isn't it? Not enough gravel. Quan says I should go for a less airy and more fairy. Trust me, I'm ready. Now, hold hands.
Artemis and Holly stood together in their underwear, gingerly locking fingers. They had crossed space and time together, weathered rebellions and tangled with demented despots, coughed blood, lost digits, inhaled dwarf fumes, and swapped eyeballs. Yet they found holding hands awkward. Number One knew he shouldn't, but he couldn't resist a parting crack.
I now pronounce you...
Neither handholder was amused. But before they had time to do more than scowl, twin bolts of red energy crackled from Number One's eyes, blasting his friends into the time stream.
Man and elf,
he said, finishing his joke, then chuckling delightedly. On screen, Foley snorted. I'm guessing you're laughing to cover your anxiety.
Exactly right, said Number One.
Where Artemis and Holly had been standing, there were flickering copies of them both, mouths open to object to Number One's comment.
That really freaks me out, the ghost images. It's like they're dead.
Foley shuddered. Don't say that. If they're dead, we all could be. How soon will they be back?
In about 10 seconds.
And if they're not back in 10 seconds?
Then never.
Foley started counting.